Sheriff John Highfather, newly returned from Louisiana, leaned back in his chair and rested his boots on his desk, his hands folded across his chest. He had arrived home to Golgotha this morning and was trying to untangle the events of last night.
Okay, now this weird goat-eating thing. You were chasing it across the roof and it was...
ugly.
Make your eyes itch, ugly.
John slid his feet to the floor and leaned forward, elbows on his desk. He was a lanky, handsome man with sandy hair. The only feature that marred his good looks was the trio of rope burns that looped around his neck. John usually covered the scars with a kerchief, but their existence was well known and part of the reason many thought Golgotha was protected by a dead man.
And this critter is the reason I have a baby goat eating the blankets in the clink.
My father nodded toward the goat kid, who was contentedly munching on the mattress in one of the jail cells.
Billy. His name is Billy, Sheriff.
Oh, can we keep him?
Can I go back to Creole zombies trying to kill me, please?
The iron door opened and Clay Turlow entered, carrying a large leather bag.
Good to see you, Clay. How are you?
John? Jim? Mutt?
Clay paused and watched the goat eating the fabric with gusto.
Whose goat is that destroying your jail cell?
Technically, it's Harry's.
I see.
Clay sat the leather bag on the floor next to Highfather's desk, opened it, and removed an odd lamp-like apparatus. He pushed aside papers and a few books from Highfather's desk to set the device flat and even on the surface. John grinned and moved to get out of Clay's way.
Make yourself at home, Clay. Thanks for helping us on this.
The device had a wide, rounded column, and above it, almost like a lampshade, was a ring of wide barrel-like protrusions of differing lengths, pointing in all directions. The barrels seemed to be made of metal with glass lenses. The whole contraption reminded Highfather of a magic lantern, a device that could produce images of glass slides projected onto a screen. He had seen one in a playhouse in Philadelphia shortly after the war.
What is that thing, Clay?
This is my Occuscope.
Clay opened a door in the column to reveal a glass cylinder full of amber liquid and eyeballs. Highfather blinked, and Mutt leaned in to the sheriff.
I told you I wasn't joshing.
I got some very good images from the Occustereograph in the alley last night, and I harvested the eyeballs that provided the best visual representations of the event.
You mean murder, Mr. Turlow?
Yes, yes, Jim.
Clay nodded as he raised the inner chamber of the column and struck a match to ignite the projector's lamp-like wick.
Murder, as you say, and quite a clever one at that. As I was saying, the eyeballs that held the best images are combined here. And once I adjust the focus, Jonathan, Mutt, could you please see to the windows?
Highfather and Mutt closed the heavy interior wooden shutters, and the jail was plunged into deep darkness. Shadows jumped and shivered in the tiny flame of Clay's match. With the wide cloth wick lit, Clay shook the match to snuff it out. He slid the column on the device back into place, hiding the flame. The room was pitch black for a moment. Then Clay twisted several knobs, like adjusting a microscope. And suddenly, the alleyway of the dove's roost and the horribly mutilated body of Sweet Molly were all around them, on every wall, every surface. Unlike a regular photograph, the eyeballs seemed to capture details to a depth where it felt as if you were there, as if it were happening right now. It was unnerving and miraculous, all at the same time.
Clay?
White man's magic.
Could make a king's ransom on this, Clay. They'd line up down the street to see a picture show like this.
Would they? I've cogitated building a circular room to provide a better immersive experience. The proper chemical hallucinogens would also enhance the verisimilitude considerably, of course. Perhaps dispersed via a nebulizer-like medium.
The odd amber-colored light of the device played across Jim's face. Any other time, he would have been amazed and delighted at Clay's wondrous achievement. But now, all he could see was the dead woman and the things this unknown beast had done to her. Again, Jim saw Lottie, his little sister. saw her bleeding from a bullet wound he'd inflicted in his mad race to avenge his father's murder. Molly may have had a brother somewhere, a family. He hated the thought of them ever seeing her like this, as the killer had left her. Jim swallowed hard and turned his chair away from Molly's ghastly surgical grin to Clay.
Mr. Turlough, sorry to interrupt, but did you find anything that will help us catch him, sir?
I have made some observations on the subject, yes, Jim.
Molly. She ain't no subject, sir. Her name is Molly James.
Clay looked at Jim, the tufts of his wild hair like smoke in the bright lantern light. He nodded.
Yes, of course, Jim. I think I have.
Well, let's have it, Clay.
Clay moved away from the oculoscope.
Now, I am certainly no lawman. However, I must confess a certain fanaticism for the romance of the adventures of the late Edgar Allan Poe's fictional investigator, C. Auguste Dupin. I read and reread The Murders at the Rue Morgue many times, and The Purloined Letter is one of my favorite pieces of fiction. I had the privilege of meeting Poe in Richmond, Virginia, before his death, and assisting him with a most delicate and macabre matter. The man was brilliant.
The sheriff and his deputies remained silent, even as Mutt gave Highfather a questioning glance.
The basis of Dupin's method of investigating a crime was a process Poe called ratiocination. In short, it's the use of intellect along with imagination to build the commission of the crime in one's mind. To even attempt to think as the criminal thinks, Dupin was such a master at this as to be considered a mind reader.
This is in short.
I have not fully had time to assemble all the particulars of the crime in my head. However, I have made some observations that may be of help in catching the villain.
Clay walked over to the part of the projection that showed the strands of the girl's insides nailed to the rickety fences.
I took the liberty of examining the scene today in full daylight. These divots on the fence where he missed the nail with the hammer and a closer examination of the nails themselves turned up some interesting bits of data. One, the murderer had planned out what he was going to do to the girl in some detail, including bringing proper materials and figuring out a way to mask his labors.
How's that? I know this alley, and he's not more than 15 feet from the rooster's side door and not more than 25 or 30 feet from the front porch. Even drunk and horny as a bull, someone on that porch should have heard all that banging of the hammer.
I found fibers embedded in the divots and tangled in the nails.
Fibers?
Threads, strands of cloth. I think our killer wrapped the head of the hammer in cloth to muffle its noise.
What good does thread do in helping us track him, Clee?
I examined the threads and they were brownish gray, and there were some black threads. The material was poor quality and coarse.
Blanket. An army blanket. A Union army blanket. They have a black stripe and they are that color exactly.
Very good, Jonathan. I examined some of the materials we have here in Golgotha and came to a similar conclusion.
Well, hell, Clay. That don't exactly narrow it down. Army blankets are all over the place. Lots of folks got them.
True. But few will have one cut up to cover a hammer, and fewer still will be originally from back east, so that will help narrow it down.
How can you know that he's from back east?
The military commissioned the Mission and Pacific Mills of San Francisco to create new blankets for the troops stationed out west. This was not a California blanket. It came with its owner from back east.
You think he's a soldier?
No, he has too fine a shoe. He's a gentleman. Plus, I'd wager most soldiers know their way around the hammer and nail. I'd make inquiries to Mr. Benham, the cobbler, to see if he recalls making or repairing shoes of that size and with similar wear on the sole as the prints we discovered in the alley. You can compare them to the drawings I took off the print details.
Jim looked at Mutt. The Indian shook his head.
That is a scary noggin, Clay. Glad you don't have any desire to be murdering anyone. He'd never catch you.
The man who did this is disgusting, Mutt. To have this kind of imagination and use it for this? Pathetic.
It's like magic, like a fortune teller, all this.
Nonsense, my boy. It's rational thought. Trump's superstition every day of the week.
Anything else, Clay?
The nails. He bought them at Bick's company store up on Argent. Augie's stores never carried this fashion of nail. Our local blacksmith, Wayland Smith, didn't make these nails. Bick's store has ones just like it in stock presently. The girl had some dust on her, most likely from rock. May have been up near the mines, or her killer was. The stars, the moon, or numerology may play a part in his madness. He despises women. I'd wager he'll strike at Dutch gals, prostitutes, again. But in a pinch, any woman will do for him. No woman in Golgotha is safe until he's caught. Oh, and Jonathan, he's not going to stop. Not until he's ready to, or has completed whatever ghastly work he is about, or you catch him or kill him.
Why?
Because he knows he's smart enough to keep getting away with it, and crazy enough to want to keep the game going with you, with the forces of order. Because if it was me, I'd keep going too.
Oh. Ah. Ugh.